everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to the show. Today's December 12th. And where do we start? Intriguing title, right? A word I made up especially for this occasion, sester sent episodic. Sester, 2.5 in Latin, sent. We know that one, 100. You know, you do a little multiplication there, you get 250. That's where we are. We made it. Now, this is not a real celebration. You know, I understand that this is a very arbitrary milestone, but I happen to be in Manchester, and I thought we would turn it into a little bit of a thing. We actually recorded about 4.5 hours of live material that will turn into 2 or 3 podcasts here. We are not doing the live show on a regular basis anymore, but I had the people, I had the equipment, the time was right, so here it is. Our first episode deals with the topic of productivity, and more specifically, getting things done, Evernote, Microsoft Outlook. The conversation also includes Osborne, a listener of the show, a longtime supporter, a friend of mine named Brian. Tony Myers also joins us for a bit, and a listener named Cameron calls in to share his thoughts and ask a couple questions. So these will come pretty fast. Part 2 will follow in a couple of days, and soon after that, we will resume the communication series with Daryl. There's a lot of stuff in the pipeline right now. So I hope you enjoy this. Also, thank you so much to all of the people who have either donated or signed up to be monthly subscribers. We have at this point, about a week into this fundraising effort, 35 new people are AV Club members, and I've also received 10 to 12 one-time donations. So I want to resume a little thing we used to do called New Subscriber Geography Trivia. That'll be at the end of today's show. I hope people understand it's supposed to be kind of a fun and silly thing. I'm not making fun of the place that you live. And if that's something that interests you, it's at the end of today's show. So let's get started, huh?
If you've ever had a chance to spend time around people who just seem really skilled at accomplishing a lot of their life's goals, their big dreams, you find that they have a couple of interesting things in common. One is that they seem to operate their lives with less franticness. They're not running around all stressed out, even though they're able to achieve a lot in their life. There just seems to be this underlying organization going on in their life. But the most important and interesting common thread that these people have, if you talk to them, is that you find out that they all take time to think deeply about what matters to them most. They actually take time out of their day or their week or month, and they ponder what they're doing, why they're doing it, and how they want to accomplish the rest of what they want to do. That ability to think deeply, to have a system for stepping back from the fast pace of daily life and plan out what you want to do and how you need to go about doing it, is exactly what the secret weapon is all about. In the next couple of minutes, I want to describe an overview of what the secret weapon is. But first, I think it's important to mention that, like all systems like this that could be called personal productivity or time management, it often looks to outsiders like a fancy to-do list for overly fussy OCD type people trying to fill every minute of every day with busyness. And it looks very much kind of like a techie way to remember, you know, the milk and, you know, what to pick up next time you're downtown. And I get that. I get that criticism. But that's really too bad, and I think it's quite inaccurate. And whenever people say that, it kind of reminds me of the first time I showed my mom my first Macintosh laptop, and she said, "Oh, it's a typewriter." You know, because obviously it's so much more than that. And because the impact that this is having on our lives and our business, we call it the secret weapon, or TSW for short. So what is the secret weapon? The secret weapon is a free organizational methodology for both your professional and personal aspects of life that reorganizes your emails, your ideas, and every to-do you have, from the smallest thing you can think up to the biggest goal that you can dream, and then it places them all into one system that stays synchronized across your computers as well as any smartphone that you've got. And it does this by combining two interesting things. The first is a brilliant productivity system called Getting Things Done. You may have heard of it. It's by an author named David Allen. And there's a short book he wrote by the same title, Getting Things Done, or GTD for short. Now, reading that book is a critical part of the secret weapon. But for now, the basic premise of GTD is that we humans tend to keep many ideas and tasks rumbling around in our heads, oftentimes for months or even years at a time. And a lot of energy is expended just trying not to forget to do them. David labels all of this as stuff, and he points out, rightly so, that this collection of stuff, these uncompleted to-dos banging around in our brain, are all open loops which not only get forgotten or neglected, but more importantly, they remain in this finite amount of memory in our brains, and that creates this background noise and distraction that just makes us a lot less productive. So we combine this GTD method with the second thing, which is an application called Evernote. Evernote is a free software app that runs on both PCs and Macs, as well as all the major smartphones, such as iPhones and the Androids. So Secret Weapon's power comes from its ability to do a few things really well. The first is that it merges the best of this GTD concept with the software Evernote in such a way that it captures all the ideas and to-dos when we suddenly come up with them, and that no matter where that happens to be. The second thing is that it sorts these hundreds of items in a way where the only ones you need show up at the place and the time you need to work on them and can work on them. The third thing is that it places non-urgent ideas and non-urgent to-dos further down in the system, and then it allows the more urgent ones to naturally bubble up to the top where you can start to work on them. And four, it ends up directing our attention towards pondering life's larger and loftier goals. And it does this in such a way where they move from lofty and unobtainable and they're just too big that we can't even think about them to doable. Now, none of us at Trutonics have ever met David Allen or the inventors, and we don't work for them. But the secret weapon merges those two things. And by combining them, you essentially have a system for accomplishing what you want in life. Again, not only that small stuff, like remembering to pick up the dry cleaning and what you get at the grocery store, but also the mid-range projects like remodeling your basement or losing the 20 pounds that you want to. But it also works well on those grander dreams that we all want to fulfill someday. And again, it's completely free. We use it ourselves at our company and our employees, and we just want to share it with others. The cool thing about the secret weapon is that it works no matter who you are, whether you're running a business like us, or you're a college student, or you're managing a family with kids to coordinate, or you're someone who wants to lose weight, or you're a yoga instructor, truck driver. It just doesn't matter. The system works for every person who has a dream and wants to get it done.
And we are now recording a final check. Check your mic.
Osborne checking mic.
Brian.
Brian checking mic.
Music beds in number one. All right, folks. We'll be back with a show in 30 seconds. I don't like this bumper. I don't think this has enough punch. No, this doesn't have enough punch to open the show. All right, let's try another one. Oh, are you kidding me? This sounds like a lullaby for children. This is one of my favorite bands, though. All right. All right. Quiet on the Set, number three. Might as well just go through them all.
They're cheering.
Yeah.
You can pretend like they're cheering for us. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the School Sucks live show, a special edition of the live show. We haven't been doing the live show for many, many months, but we're back for a special occasion. This is the School Sucks Live Sester Sent Episodic Gala.
That's right. 250.
Now, this is a fake celebration. This is not a real celebration. You know, 250 podcasts. I mean, back in 2006, 2007, Stefan Molyneux used to do 250 podcasts a week. You know?
True.
We've taken 4 years to get there. So we understand that this is a modest achievement, but it would be fun to do a celebration and get back here in the live studio for one night and produce some content. In the studio with me, as he always used to be, is Osborne.
Yeah, back in the day.
And is this your first time, Brian, on School Sucks podcast?
This is my first time. I am a School Sucks virgin.
Wow. To the actual being on part.
No, I mean, in all ways.
No. Many, many penetrations into your ears over the years.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay. So I want to thank you guys, first of all. This is a fake celebration with hopefully some real, genuine gratitude. You guys have been two of the longest supporters of the show. Either just, you know, being in my corner, giving advice.
Nagging.
Yeah, telling me the things that I should do, even if I don't want to do them. We were actually talking about that at dinner, and that's a conversation we should have in the future, because a lot has changed in the last 4 or 5 months. I used to be very overwhelmed, and I'll be honest with you, when people used to tell me, hey, you know what you should do? I would say, even if I like them, even if I thought they were just the dearest man or woman, I would say, get away. I already have more than I know what to do with, you know? And I realized, I think back in August, that this was causing me just a tremendous amount of stress, kind of like a low-level stress. You know what I mean? Just always this kind of nagging that there was things I wasn't getting done, that I was juggling too much stuff in my head. And I feel it was not only sapping my ability to plan for the future, but also eating up mental RAM, hurting my creativity in the moment. You know, my mind wasn't free in many ways, because I had become enslaved to all these projects and things that I wanted to do in the short term. It was kind of very much in like this survival mode. So I started using this program based on a book called Getting Things Done by David Allen. And I tried to get Osborne into it recently. We're going to talk tonight about some of the obstacles. And it's very, very serendipitous that you would be here because you have a technical background with Microsoft. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I have a technical background with Microsoft.
Tell us like a little bit more.
I worked with Microsoft as a consultant for a few years, and I wrote a book for one of their products, and they flew me all over the world to speak to developers and business analysts and business people to tell them how to use the technologies. Actually, they didn't specifically tell me to pitch the product. They wanted me to talk about the technology, specifically XML mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, you talk about whatever you want.
Yeah.
And we're going to pay all this money. So I took the money and everybody was happy. So, you know, that was years and years ago. My latest book is on Drupal, which is a decidedly non-Microsoft. It's an open source, more of a Linux-based developer stack.
Mm-hmm.
For doing websites, but everybody's writing a Drupal book these days. So I thought, well, I really like Windows and the Windows development environment, Visual Studio. So I wrote a book called Drupal for Windows Developers. And so the five people who like Drupal and Windows bought it, but it was more of a labor of love for me and kind of to prove that it can be done and kind of to bring the Microsoft people into the open source movement, which I think it's doing not by itself, but there's a lot of movement that direction. But I think there's a lot of place where those two communities could get together.
And you've been away from Microsoft for some time, but I'm guessing you're still using their products.
Oh yeah. Who doesn't use Windows?
Yeah. And you seem like you're a guy who gets a lot done. And I'm interested tonight, even though I think you seem relatively unfamiliar with this specific method that we're talking about, on your input. We've devoted probably 5 or 6 hours to looking at ways to boost productivity on my show in the last couple months. And I think it's a major, not just being more productive, but being at least as productive as we already are in a stress-free way, in a serene way.
No matter how much you have to do, and how many distractions you get out of the way, it seems like there's always more that you want to do.
Exactly.
Like for instance, I don't have a TV. I gave up my satellite box years and years ago. Mm-hmm. So all the movies are downloaded or, you know, Amazon Prime or whatever. I don't have Netflix either. And so I'm watching a lot less TV, you know, a couple hours a week.
Yeah.
Which gives me a lot more time to do a lot more things. So I'm doing a lot more things, but I still feel like, God, there's so much more other things I could do.
Now, you, on the other hand, Osborne, you're a guy who does a lot of things, and you feel like you're sometimes not doing enough.
I often feel like I'm not doing anything, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you're an executive, right? So I've often, you know, in the companies that I've worked for in the past, I think I've said this on the show before, you know, I've watched these people, and I said, what are they doing? But it might just have been that, you know, I mean, at the time I was obviously pretty low level and they were probably doing things that I didn't even understand, you know, that were just way beyond my purview. So you feel like you do have things to do, and you feel like maybe the mountain of things to do versus what is getting done is too disparate.
Right. The mountain seems to always get bigger and
the things to do is still just a little hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. That being said, I asked you to check out this series of shows that we had done called Presence and Productivity.
Yes.
Tony, who's featured in that series, will probably join us relatively shortly here. But I want to talk, I guess, in a little more detail about where this productivity pursuit began for you. Like, what were you looking at, or what were you mired in where you said, I've got to do something, or I want to do something at least?
Well, every several months, it comes up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I really need to do something about this.
Yeah.
And so we've tried a number of projects at our company for managing the projects and people's time. We're currently trying 5 p.m. It's one of the multitudinous
Martini time, right?
It's actually software.
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
It's a cloud-based project management system. Mm-hmm. And no one likes using it. I think we've got about one person who actually logs their tasks in there, and everybody else kind of doesn't. Even though once a week we say, okay, everybody log your tasks in the 5 p.m.
Yeah.
You know, a product is
logging your tasks becomes another task.
Yeah. So a product is only as useful as people wanting to use it. So
it sounds like what could happen in a large company where something like this, they try to implement something like this. And large companies obviously can be in many ways bureaucratic, especially if they're heavily regulated industries. They can be even more bureaucratic. If people don't see the value in something that, I mean, this sounds a lot like a place called school, where stuff comes down from the top and people don't understand the value and they don't get invested in it personally, emotionally. They don't understand how it's going to help them, how it's going to be useful. And these are systems too, like, you know, Microsoft Project. Most people involved in the project, I'm guessing, don't know the ins and outs of the software as well as the project management team or project manager. You are trying to do this. You say you're kind of overwhelmed by email primarily in your professional life.
Yeah. So my email is sitting about 9 or 10,000 unread messages right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, you get probably 100 to 150 new ones a day.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's not time to read them all.
And you listen to this series of shows. So you got the principles of the Getting Things Done program, right? It's basically correct. Like, let's use our mind. And this is critical thinking, too. Let's use our minds like the computers that they are. We take stuff in through our senses. We want to identify it. We want it to make sense. We process it. We organize it. We put it where it needs to go. And then we turn it around into meaningful action, input, process, output. This is communication. This is critical thinking. This is productivity. I think that this 1-2-3 method is a useful way of thinking about a lot of these things as we try to be more efficient in our thinking and how we apply our thinking to, you know, what we say and what we do. And
it's the trivium of productivity.
It is really the trivium of productivity. And you're pretty familiar with the trivium?
Mm. Well, based on what I've heard from on your show.
Oh good. Good.
I only know what Brett tells me.
That's you know, you might want to get a second opinion some things. I'm interested to hear the problems you had as you tried to implement this.
I was driving home the day after Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So I listened to all 5 or 6 episodes of your productivity series.
Mm-hmm.
And a gentleman that you had on the last episode mentioned another podcast where they kind of have a virtual support group of getting things done.
Yeah.
So I popped that in and I listened to good 8 hours of that as well.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of episodes in there in particular that the lights started clicking on. And I said, oh my God, I'm going to get home and I'm going to implement this right away. This sounds great. And it was these episodes on how to use Outlook. I never used Outlook. I used like Thunderbird and when we put in our Exchange server, I'd been using the Outlook web app, which doesn't really have any features to it.
Mm-hmm.
But now I actually have a desk and an office now, which I'd been working just off of my laptop for probably about a year.
Yeah.
Anyway, so my plan was to get home, implement this Outlook program where you use the categorizations and search folders. And Outlook also has follow-up dates and all kinds of just cool features that are great for managing your tasks and your email box. So I get home, I start playing with it, and I realize that, well, none of that stuff translates to the mobile devices.
Hmm. Interesting. So my suggestion, and I'm interested to hear what Tony has to say, because he's going to join us in a minute. Now, Tony has a Microsoft background. Tony is pretty fluid in the getting things done process, and he's also started to use this program, Evernote. Brian, are you familiar with Evernote?
Sure.
Okay, so Evernote really was the game changer, and Evernote is really, for me, what made getting things done, the David Allen getting things done, make sense. Because it almost seems like, even though Evernote, I believe, originated maybe 2007, 2008, and it certainly didn't exist when Allen wrote that book, Allen was using something called Lotus Notes, which I guess still exists. But and obviously Outlook tries to be that kind of all-encompassing personal and professional management system as well. But yeah, there is this question of how is everything integrated into Evernote? For me, anyway, Evernote became the thing that I just opened in the morning and looked at what was there. I looked at kind of the horizontal view of my life. What's in the inbox? Where does that stuff need to go? What's coming into the inbox today? You know, what do I anticipate? What projects am I working on? What step am I at? And just starting my day like that kind of gave it a clarity and a calmness. And what I used to do is I would get up in the morning and I would open Facebook and I would be like, holy shit, look at the world. It's crazy, you know, and I would be all worked up drinking coffee and reading, scrolling through my news feed at a frantic pace. But to change that routine to start with Evernote, and even like productive people, I think they start with a calendar, but a calendar is not a good organization system, you know, because you can't use a calendar to manage a project. You can only use a calendar to manage fixed things in time. And it's kind of also a way of seeing promises that you may or may not break because of what happens in life. So I've tried to, I used to think that a calendar was just a perfect organization system. So what I would do is I would set up all these color codes of all these things that I wanted to do every day. Work on the show, go to the gym, an hour of self, which is
me time.
Wait. Let's explain that in a little more detail.
No, that's not good.
Yeah.
No, by the way,
there's children listening.
By the way, I thought for the longest time that a selfie was that act. But when I say self, I just mean like personal improvement, obviously, an ongoing process. I mean, I can block 5 minutes for selfies, you know, here and there. I can intersperse them throughout the day. But, you know, an hour of personal time to focus on self-work or personal growth, I think, is really important, too. And I would look back at this calendar just weeks after doing this, and I'd be like, I didn't change anything. This is just like now a picture of my broken commitments to myself.
A reminder.
You know, with beautiful colors, but really, ultimately, you know, pretty disappointing. Evernote was just an awesome tool for planning the show. I don't have it open right now, but even just going through the process of here's the things that need to be dealt with tonight, putting that into a notebook in Evernote made a huge difference. Like I'm going through that process, and obviously the habit is hard to change. You know, I think you're kind of maybe looking at it like, it seems like more tasks, right?
Right. Another thing to replicate my entire inbox.
Well, right.
Except manually.
So this was the question that I was asking you. We had dinner before this, and you know, you said you have about 9,000 emails. You have multiple email accounts, but the one that you're really focused on, obviously, is work. That might have, you know, 8 to 10 somewhere, like a lot of emails. Who are they coming from?
Mostly people who work for me.
Mostly people who work for you, right? And then the question would be, what is it? You know, is it is it actionable? Are most of these emails actionable? Can you do something with them besides just responding?
Yeah, they're pretty much all people wanting things from me.
Wanting things from you.
Yes.
Okay.
And some of them are easy, where you can just answer them, right? Mm-hmm. And other, we were talking about one dinner where it's like, I could answer this question, but to give a full answer really requires a conversation to extract some more information out of them.
Tony, can you hear us?
Yes. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, you sound good.
With Brett, thank you for having me back on the show. And to Osborne and Brian, it's a pleasure to meet you both and to have the opportunity to discuss these topics. So.
All right. Well, thanks for coming back on. Most people in the podcast audience probably remember Tony from the Productivity series. He was in, I believe, 5 of the 6 episodes. We've been talking about Osborne's discovery of the program so far, Tony, and I sent you a message.
Yeah, I've been listening a little bit.
Yeah.
It's been a very interesting discussion.
I sent you a message a couple of days ago, just kind of outlining the problems that Osborne related to me. So based on what you've heard so far, do you have any thoughts or questions?
I work for a company that my father started. We're basically partners with Microsoft. So we resell their software, like Xapta, and we set up, you know, we go into manufacturing corporations. We kind of like set up all their processes from BI tools the whole way down to MRP and route management and all these different sort of like, parts of a business and how to make it more consolidate into a single software. But my father can empathize with having over like 15,000 emails in his inbox. Mm-hmm. I daily go through it and I check out, you know, a lot of the invoices he's not forwarding to me or, you know, payments I need to consider to certain consultants. So it's, you know, endlessly sort of chaotic. And I know at the time when I decided to go ahead and implement David Allen's Getting Things Done system, it was, I was helping out Richard and Lisa at Tragedy and Hope set up a studio. So at that time, I was also getting an influx as our business continued to grow of a lot more payments, a lot more money to manage, and a lot more things to continue to keep up with our own system. So it became a sort of what I had to do is really sit down for a week, maybe 2 weeks, and just change my habits. I had to sit down, I had to read it, and I had to like actually put it in place and kind of, I hate to use the word force, but really find that motivation in myself to say it'll be worth it if I'm be willing to change how I kind of view email, especially because I manage almost everything digitally. So yeah. Email coming in and how to, you know, get that under control. Cause I was receiving hundreds of emails as well. And I had an inbox of only like 500 or 1,000. So it's nothing compared to, you know, Osborne, what you said you're dealing with. And, but it's, you know, it does, it's funny how quickly it can get out of control and at the most inopportune times.
Yeah. It's hard to change habits on the fly, right? Like, it's hard to think about fire prevention when your pants are on fire. It's not in your top priorities at that time. So, yeah, I remember, it was nice during the summer. Like, it was the perfect time, the month of August. Things were, and especially with what I do, things are as fast or as slow as I want them to be. So, for me, it was the right time to just slow things down and be able to slowly start changing some habits and thinking about things in a new way. But it really helped me too to be able to do it piece by piece. I spent like 5 or 6 weeks with the book and the audio book. That helped me move into it slowly. I mean, if somebody sat down and read the book in a weekend, I think they'd probably be like, well, F that, you know, I mean, I'm not doing that. But it's a pretty simple process once you, get the gist of it. It is, as we mentioned before you joined us, Tony, input, process, output. And
yeah, it's a Trivium method, you know, so to get in there real quick. But, you know, I've been studying the Trivium through Tragedy and Hope for at least a year and a half, maybe 2 years at that point.
Yeah.
When I decided to go ahead and implement it. So it just made sense from the way I'd been kind of looking at the mind and a sort of description for the mind and the way we take in information, process it, and then output it, just like you said. And to David Allen's method, and there's a couple other psychologists who have similar methods to help people overcome anxiety and depression, where it's just being conscious of your immediate thoughts and being conscious of the stuff around you, and making sure you name it and find a way to process it. And it just kind of gets your mind in a sort of working mode. And that's where David Allen uses the phrase mind like water, where you just kind of get in that sort of like, you're just doing it automatically. You're being able to categorize things, know where things are at, know when you need to do something, just because you have things pretty generally organized, at least in these general categories. And so that's kind of the general gist of his whole approach. I mean, the idea is, we try to hold all these ideas in our mind, usually. like we have all these open loops, right? So
yeah.
There's all these next actions. So we might have a pile of papers, but we're not sure like exactly what this pile of paper is. It's just stuff.
Yeah.
And so because it's not named, because we haven't identified it, and that's like the key. Once we identify it, our mind automatically says, well, what do I need to do about it? You read through it, you know, there's some next actions you have to take, but you have a whole stack of things like that, and it becomes sort of chaotic. And so he just developed this very simple method to be able to organize that, to know what you need to do next and what you can kind of relegate or, you know, delegate to other tasks or maybe just reference items and just real simple categories.
So,
to kind of get things organized.
So that's where we were at when you joined the call. I was asking Osborne the question, what is it, right? So to turn back to you for a second, what are the things that are coming in? Is it actionable? Is it trash? Is it reference? In other words, is it something that's archivable that you need it for later? I realized that I had 8,000 emails in my inbox. Went in my inbox, like not even in the whole email system. They were in the inbox.
Unread.
Well, a lot of them had been read, but there was probably 5,000 or 6,000 that had never been opened. But a huge percentage of them were not actionable. They were autoresponder emails. They were, you know, you received a payment via PayPal, like just scheduled payments, like things I don't have to read. So I think that initial step of identification, because when what Tony was describing there too is like all of this stuff that kind of dances around us just becomes noise, and ultimately that translates into this sort of nebulous stress. At least that's from my experience. So, you know, identifying these things, and at dinner I said, "What would happen if you just selected all and deleted?"
Probably nothing.
Right. Probably very little. There would be some stuff that would have to be reworked, but
yeah.
You know, in general, life would go on.
But it's backed up somewhere, right?
Yeah. But and again, only because I'm not using it properly now.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure there are lots of things in there that I should be doing or should have done that I'm just not doing.
And do you, how about you, Brian? Do you try to empty your inbox?
Well, I use Gmail.
Yeah.
Google Mail. And it's got this awesome thing called Priority Inbox. And if it tries to figure out, I mean, it's kind of creepy how it, you know, tracks you and tries to see what you're interested in and what you open. And then that's what floats up.
Yeah.
Especially in this time of all these NSA revelations. I'm not sure really what to do about that. Anyway, the priority inbox shows up, and I get maybe 4 or 5 emails a day inside that priority mailbox, where I might get 1,000 everywhere else.
Yeah.
So there's an inbox that might get 1,000 a day, but in that priority, only the people that I respond to a lot of times, or you know, the things that it thinks are important, get there. So you know, I give most of my time to that, and really just ignore everything else.
Right.
So you know, that tool is doing a lot for my productivity. So, you know, there might be something that's very important that is, doesn't rise to the priority inbox, but I've been using it for years and nothing has burned down yet.
Yeah, yeah. And the Gmail added this feature, I think, a couple of years ago, because my inbox, I mean, I used to use Hotmail and everything would just go to the same place and it would be flooded. And I actually gave up on the account. I stopped checking it because I didn't have Facebook notifications deactivated. And I was in all these I would get added to these Facebook groups where there were some Facebook people at the time who spent a lot of time each day on Facebook, you know, fighting with other people. And I would log in and have 1,000 new emails and every single notification from one of these groups. So eventually I just gave up and MSN eventually canceled the account because I hadn't checked it or it accumulated too much size. But when I started using Gmail a couple of years ago, there are tabs at the top and one will be called like social. Right. So if you click over to social, it will show you all that Facebook.
Yeah,
crap.
You can create filters so the stuff automatically goes. And you can do that with Outlook also.
Absolutely.
I mean, most of these do that.
Now, Tony, you use Outlook, I assume?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely.
Now,
I use it to manage every email, not just my work email, but I've pretty much connected in every single other email I use. So one for Tragedy and Hope, because I still help out Rich and Lisa sometimes. I have one on Gmail and Yahoo, so I made sure it connected everything in that.
So, Tony, I don't know if you were listening earlier when we were talking about Outlook, but so I was all excited to get home and implement getting things done within Outlook, and then come to realize that none of those cool features of Outlook have any translation over to the mobile devices.
it's interesting. I can't give a definitive answer on how they translate over, because I do, at least I have a Windows phone. I'm able to get my email and able to manage things from the Outlook app I have. And also I have Evernote as well, which helps me manage things by essentially outputting what's coming in from Outlook to Evernote, so I can still manage things. And the problem with that, I found at least, is there's still some things I need to do specifically only on Outlook. That I found it kind of sort of, I'm just kind of bridging that road right now. But as far as being able to, that translation over to smaller devices, mobile devices, it's not quite sure, especially with search functions. I haven't actually tried that myself because I haven't implemented that specific portion of getting things done. As far as the philosophy, I pretty much, and the general sort of workflow process that he defines, I've implemented that in the folder structure. And I have my own search folders as well within that. Because the beautiful thing about Evernote is that it can synchronize with pretty much any mobile device, pretty much any device at all. It's pretty incredible how well it works. I just haven't found the perfect bridge yet between some things that I really just need to manage and search through and have that functionality just through Outlook juxtaposed to Evernote, which pretty much is like an Outlook off-putting tool. You know, you take all the inbox, whatever you get in your inbox, you take it out and you pretty much define it into these categories. But the trick is, like, what it's making you do is it's making you identify everything. So, like, let's say you get 100 emails. You can take all 100 emails, you can go to Evernote, off-put it, and then it'll give you the option of adding tags and context to what, when, and where. And from there, you can kind of, what it's forcing you to do is get into a habit of defining next actions. And so it breaks it up into these very generalized categories, what next actions would be, and allows you to pretty much add these tags to the to-do list, or to add tags to notes is how they would describe it. So the notes would be the general items, and the tags would be the context of those general items. And it'll kind of give you at least a bit more control, because you have the opportunity to know what you need to do first and what you might just need to read and review later, or archive, or other things like that. So I found it to be extremely useful, except that there is still yet, there are still some things on Outlook I kind of need to manage from Outlook.
Right.
Because of the backup functionality, the way we have our Exchange server backed up, I need to maintain certain sensitive documents through that system, as well as my own management system, digital document management system, which I have backed up at my home.
So what I would say for somebody who's new with, maybe an overwhelming amount of stuff to go through is to set up Evernote and set up one notebook called In. I mean, do you have a physical inbox, Osborne, on your desk?
You mean like where paper goes?
That? Yeah.
No, no paper is allowed in my office.
All right. So when David Allen wrote the book, he was talking about a lot of paper-based systems, having a physical inbox, having a tickler file, like actual file cabinets. And I said, especially being mobile at the time, I was staying down in Connecticut, and I was like, I don't have a desk, so I can't, I was sitting at a picnic table pretty much. My papers would blow away. So I needed the entire system to be digital. And I wanted, obviously, to move away. I don't get mail. I pay all my bills electronically, so I don't really have a need for paper. Nobody is sending me letters. Making the whole system digital was certainly doable. So everything that I would want to put in an inbox was already on a computer somewhere, or it was in my head and needed to be externalized. So getting everything into In is a good place to start. And then once you look at everything that's in, you can see all of the what's. And then when Tony was talking about tags, you also see the things that occur in your life frequently, the places that you are, right? So I make a tag for at computer, at office, at gym, at errands, at home generally, and then all the people I deal with, Osborne, Tony, Richard Grove, Wes Bertrand, and they all have tags for the who's. And then there's, I even made tags for the whys. Why is this a thing that I do? Is it personal fulfillment? Is it economic increase? Is it fitness related? Is it diet related? And they get, so everything in my life is not just identified as a what, it also has a context. And I was talking to my brother, I was showing him Evernote the other day, and he's a finance manager at a Mercedes dealership in Massachusetts. So he manages a lot of people. And his eyes lit up. He said, "You mean I can keep track of all the interactions that I have with individual people?" So there can just be a record of, no, on November 28th, we had this conversation, And now a person comes into your space, into your consciousness, and you say, okay, well, what is the context into which this person fits? And you have, you know, a tag for them. You have a tag for a place. I started making how tags for processes that I might need to explain to other people. But the notebooks that you create are the what's, the individual things that you have to do, but they involve people, they involve places, they involve times. So Evernote seems to be between the notebooks and notes that you can set up and the tags that you can apply to them, the best way to organize all of these different things in life.
It's the first step, essentially, to David Allen's, like, there's the five keys to gaining control. So David Allen's like, you know, for most, he'd walk into an executive's office and you see papers and files open there. Everything just would be chaotic. And he's the first thing he'd say, how do you go about gaining control of that situation, right? And so the way he'd go about doing it, so you need to collect, process, organize, and review. And so it takes you first have to observe, and you need to identify, and you need to name those things. That's why he's big on tags. That's why he's big on making sure everything is properly labeled. He's really extremely big on labeling because he likes to have very simple labels, very general categories, so you can kind of get your mind into the process of putting things where they need to be for easy reference. And that idea, I think it combines the first two steps. It makes you observe. It makes you identify. In that case, what it also does is it kind of helps the processing by giving you some context to what those next actions would be. So it's just the idea of you're taking in all those notes and you're giving some those notes some context. And that helps you be able to manage what, you know, would be in your priority list at that time. Like, am I on my computer? Am I, you know, at the store? Am I at the gym? You know, you can check all this stuff because you have, obviously, we all probably have mobile devices connecting with the internet. And that's also the other beautiful thing is that you can upload it to a web-based server. I don't know if it's a cloud environment they have set up, but you can access it anywhere.
What's important about that is that you always have a capture device with you, because I think one of the things that kind of gnaws at us is we think of all the things we have to do, right? Like, you know, and David Allen uses this example of like, well, you know, your mind is terrible at being an organization system. Your mind doesn't have a mind of its own. you know, like you'll be lying in the dentist chair and your mind will say, you know what, you should really paint, you know?
It's not good for holding ideas. It's good for having ideas.
Absolutely.
The big problem with our, you know, busy lives and the way we communicate today with information being pretty much instantaneous, you know, our lives have kind of become, you know, faster in a way. And we're doing more today and now than we've ever done before. And I think that's kind of why people are overloaded, because before, I'm sure individuals could hold more or at least do more, and things wouldn't be as chaotic as they are in the normal business world they are today. So, and on top of that, that's the whole Evernote has this whole integration they call the secret weapon with getting things done. And so they pretty much say Evernote's the system, the digital management system that David Allen couldn't or didn't have at the time he wrote the book. And so this, like, they pretty much integrated both systems and they made it as seamless as possible. And I found that to work extremely well, but, you know, So yeah, there's always more to do. And the other thing to consider is it's a habits change, because most management systems are going to tell you to look at something from the altitudes first. Like, what's your ultimate goal? And then try to, like, you know, go backwards from there. But David Allen says first you need to control your normal life, your business life, and everything from there, that standpoint first. And then you have a clearer mind. And then all of a sudden, like, what you want to do will become more. You'll be more in line with the opportunity that exists for things you can do. And so your goals and your what you want to achieve in 2, 5, 10 years becomes more approachable.
That was what I was
realistic.
Yeah, that was what I was saying too about the dividends that were paid. Immediately I felt like I was having more creative ideas again, or clearer ideas.
It's almost natural because your mind is so clear and you're not overstressed and overburdened by all these open loops because you're trying to hold all these ideas. And certainly I did that for quite some time and it caused me a lot of stress and anxiety.
One of the obstacles that I think you're experiencing, Osborne, is that Evernote is great because you can take it everywhere with you, but Outlook, you can't. So there is a way, and if other people are trying to do this, that you can send things, you just BCC, because I mean, if you're responding to an email, if you're sending somebody an email, that meant that it was actionable. That meant there's either something to do or it's important later. You can just BCC your Evernote account and send it there. And then, I mean, it's really just a matter of, at first, yeah, it seems like another task. It seems like another thing that you have to do. But I really think that the time saved later on by having places to put things makes up for that. I mean, does this seem overwhelming? I think it does at first. It did to me.
For sure.
So did you watch the Secret Weapon videos?
Yes, I did.
And what'd you think?
So I was going to ask you guys, have you guys tried the brain drink?
The brain drink?
Those guys are hawking?
No.
No. So on the Secret Weapon site, the Secret Weapon is just a free thing. They don't accept donations or anything. But if you look, they're selling the brain drink. I think that's the name of it. Mind drink, brain drink, something like that. It's got 20 times the active ingredients as a Red Bull or some such thing.
Yeah.
It's supposed to make your brain work better.
Interesting.
So you haven't seen it.
No, I haven't seen it. What'd you think of the videos though? Was that helpful at all? Or cause he's using Outlook, isn't he? I mean, getting things done is like a bedrock for this. It's the foundation that you build on. And really just in its simplest form, the input process output is really what you need to understand about it. And there's a couple smaller steps within the processing. So the output is the doing, the input is all the stuff that comes in. Now, obviously it's an obstacle for getting started if a lot of your inputs are coming through email. So, I mean, once the question gets answered of how does Outlook integrate with Evernote, and that seems to be the best way to do it, is you just BCC emails that are important or maybe useful later.
Sure. And when you install Evernote on your computer, it sticks a little Evernote plugin in your Outlook.
Yeah.
You just click the button and you can tell it what notebook to go into and what tags you want.
And the tag system, I think, is pretty intuitive. Like you start typing the tag and it will complete it, I think.
Yes. And it'll let you create new tags on the fly.
So you have Evernote.
I do. I have it on my phone. I have it on my iPad. I have it on my computer.
All right. How about you? Have you ever tried it, Brian?
I've just used it for taking notes. I mean, not for doing all of the categorization and that. I mean, just I used to use it for grocery lists until I discovered a better tool for that.
Remember the milk?
Our groceries.
Our groceries.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of them out there. But
Our
groceries is awesome.
Tony, had you tried any other like alternatives to Evernote before really embracing that? Because you were still pretty new to it when we were hanging out back in August.
Yeah, no, I've never used any other sort of application. I understand there are a lot of applications out there, which I wasn't aware of at the time, but I'm really only familiar now with Evernote. I've really only been using Evernote. Really, what I did before was manage everything from Outlook. Outlook has so much functionality that I was able just to do with the macros and the search folders and, you know, the sort of the level that I could go in and pretty much organize it and develop it the way I want to.
Yeah.
And so I found it to be the best because it also communicated with my phone, translated to my phone pretty well. And I was able to at least keep up with things having a mobile device. And so from that standpoint, I just never considered using another application to sort of manage everything else. I just mainly worked with Outlook specifically. Evernote, I found to be, again, extremely effective, but maybe because I've been on Outlook for so long, I found it a little bit hard to bridge the gap totally. I have to still use Outlook in a specific way that Evernote, I'm not sure yet can fulfill that functionality or not.
What is that?
Evernote can do everything else I've expected to, and much more. I just love the way they've developed the software around that philosophy that David Allen outlined in this book. And that's the key. That's why I find it to be so efficient. If you're willing to learn the philosophy and then develop the habit.
And we talked about the importance of identification, asking the question, what is something? And then, is it something I need for later? Is it something I need to save? Is it something that is actionable? Or is it trash? And once something is actionable, I mean, most of the things I think that Tony and I are running through the system are things we're going to ultimately do ourselves. I mean, obviously, Tony probably has, you know, business related things that can be sent to somebody else. But you have the question then of doing it or deferring it if it's actionable, because you probably have people, Osborne, that you can defer a lot of things to. Am I wrong?
Yes, there's much more deferment going on than I would like, but... Yes.
You mean you would like to be doing more yourself?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So another important thing is how long does it take? So we were talking about something earlier, just something specific to your business that you didn't do. And I asked you how long it would take to do it, and you said about a minute, right, to ultimately do the whole thing. So
right. So I see the email, and I'm going to do it, but then a phone call happens, and I'm talking on the phone for a half an hour. 20 more emails come in during that call. Then I step out to go grab a water. I come back. There's 20 more emails. The next thing you know, the thing's gone.
Right.
And
right.
I never see it again. And so the guy calls me up a week later. He's like, hey, so this thing I asked you last week. Oh, yeah. Here, let me do that real quick.
Right.
Yeah.
So in the book, and there are some things that I think are useful strategies that he mentions in the book that obviously just from knowing 1, 2, 3 input, process, output.
There's a really funny video too that describes that exact same problem that he did himself. He has on YouTube. It's like a 5-minute little short video.
Yeah, he actually has some good videos on there, but he has a channel, but in the book there are some useful nuggets of wisdom, like the 2-minute rule, and Tony extended it to the 5-minute rule for himself. But I mean, if you have things that can be done in 2 minutes, and that was really another game changer for me, just do them. Cause like I'd get an email and I'd be like, I don't want to sit here and type for 90 seconds, but just, you know, over time, just being able to, you know, integrate that habit of if something is less than 2 minutes, it just gets done. Because then, you know, some things don't even have to go into an inbox. They are just done and out of your consciousness and not taking up any of your mental RAM. There are some things, it's an ongoing process. You know, I've been at this now for like almost 4 months, and it still is like some things just come in and you're like, ugh, nah, I don't want to do anything with that right now. And it sits there. And then that happens a few times and it starts to accumulate. And another helpful tip is having a day. For me, I try to make it Sunday where I just, you know, once a week review the system. Do I need more tags? Do I need less tags? Do I need more notebooks? Do I need less notebooks? And obviously the process, just by having it entirely digital, is streamlined. I mean, the book book's about 250 pages, and I think it could seem pretty overwhelming because it's a lot, as we've mentioned before, it's a lot of paper-based stuff that at this point, as the Secret Weapon points out, I think it's pretty irrelevant for most of us anyway. So what are you going to do, Osborne? What do you think?
The more I think about it, the more I think I'm going to just try to use Outlook by itself. Mm-hmm. For the emails, and then just as I'm mobile, not worry about the more extensive features and just
for Outlook,
and just take care of it when I'm at my desk.
Yeah,
which is more often now than it used to be, so that might be doable. And then maybe use the Evernote for more of the non-email collecting, because email does not work well for just on the fly collecting of thoughts and information, right?
No, I mean, I wouldn't. It is, I think, separate tasks. Like it can be. Like if you need everything integrated in one place, there is a way to do it. But I need Outlook, or I need to go back to Thunderbird because I want all my email together. Like right now, checking back and forth between 2 emails, that's too much for me. I mean, it's not too much for me, but if it's something that can be streamlined, I would like to streamline it. You know, so Outlook would do that. I could just integrate multiple email accounts into Outlook. So
you can do that with Google Mail too. You can have many emails pointed in.
You can?
I do.
That's nice. I like that. So yeah, I have 2 emails, and then God, the Facebook Messenger. It's relentless. I like that too. It's nice sometimes to just be able to say, hey, you know, yeah. Thanks. Thanks for saying you like the show. Smiley face.
Yeah, I treat that like text messaging on my phone.
Yeah,
it's kind of the same. If I don't have their phone number, I'll Facebook message when I otherwise might have text messaged.
Right. So yeah, I think there is a way. Like, you shouldn't feel like if you can't integrate Outlook into one place, one, you know, all encompassing system, that getting things done won't work. I think there's always a way to incorporate the key principles of it. And I'll give you can leave here with the book. It's in my bag there, so you can take it with you and thumb through it if you like. Tony, we're actually going to move on and take some phone calls from the folks maybe. So do you have any closing thoughts or words of wisdom for us? I certainly appreciate you taking the time to go through this with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I very much enjoyed it. And thank you guys for the useful feedback. And I Osborne, as far as the way you're going to use the system, that's really the way I've been using it. And so thus far, it's worked very well for me. And I know Evernote, I still, like I said, haven't found that perfect bridge. So Outlook, just the functionality it has and the way I can manage all my email, not just my work, from one centralized location. And in Google Mail, and there's other, I'm sure Mac Mail can probably do a similar functionality. Anyways, no, I appreciate you guys having me on. And I hope, just remember the David Allen perspective is really just like a philosophy, a basic method that he's outlined, and it can be applied in different areas in different ways. So I know we're talking really about digital management tools right now, but it can be applied in a completely different sort of perspective in your own personal life, maybe with, you know, papers or the way you want to organize a garage or the way you just want to, you know, complete a house project of some type. It's just a general method. So it's multi-platform.
Excellent. I appreciate, you know, all your participation in School Sucks so far. It's been great.
It's always wonderful. Thank you so much, Brett.
All right, Tony, have a good night.
Take care, guys.
Bye.
I do. Yeah.
There are people chatting and they're certainly free to call in. You can try 843 join SSP or you can Skype in, School Sucks live. Yeah, I mean, it's also really easy if things come in through email to just basically create a note real quick in Evernote. You just control, you know, go to your inbox, control N, call Bill. You know, if you've got a bill in your life,
I don't know.
It's okay if you don't. It's okay if we don't. Okay. We don't all.
We all have bills in our life.
Mm. Oh, yes. That's equivocation right there. That's what that's called. Mm.
That's a 250th show word. It's a pretty big one.
Sester sent episodic
yeah.
word, which is a word I made up. Did I say that at the beginning of the show? Did I say up. This was the Sester sent episodic? Called. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're coming to the end of hour one. If people have questions about what we've discussed or thoughts, this would be the time for those calls. So I'm happy that people are chatting. Back to the integration of Evernote with Outlook. Somebody says the Microsoft Drupal guy could make something.
I'll get on it.
Okay.
I was looking at Evernote is pretty open-ended in terms of ability to develop tools around it.
It's got an API?
So it must, because they have a lot of third-party apps that associate with it. So,
okay. Yeah, it's
maybe my spare time after I implement getting things done, I'll have more spare time that I could maybe develop.
Because everything will be done.
To deal with it.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
The thing that I really like, the simple in a nutshell, as far as embracing the GTD and making it useful, what David said, he has a background in martial arts, the author, Mind Like Water, one of Bruce Lee's, you know, famous saying, be like water. You know, we're often disrupted by things that come into our consciousness, that come into the to-dos of our life. You know, I might have even talked a little bit, like when I mentioned Facebook Messenger, like it's relentless. That's the wrong attitude to have about people who want to send me messages and say, hey, Brett, I see you're on Facebook. Are you having a good day? Here's the thing. Have you seen it? They're just trying to be helpful. They're just trying to be nice. So me using the word relentless shows that I still have this mind not always like water attitude, right? Having a mind like water means as something comes in, your mind, your consciousness, your serenity does what water does. It absorbs it peacefully and returns to calm.
You're letting the plumbing get in the way. The Facebook Messenger is the plumbing, and so is email, whatever email you've got, because really, you just want water. You just want to drink a water, or you want to wash the car, or you want, you know, there's a task that you need, but in order to get that done, it's got to travel through pipes.
Yeah.
So you need to talk to your legion of fans and admirers. That's a good thing. That's what you want to do.
Yeah.
So, but you're seeing Facebook Messenger as being the thing, but it's not the thing. It's just the conduit. It's just the pipes to get to the thing.
So a much better way to do it would be this format that we're doing right here, which is why back in May of 2012, we actually started doing the live show.
All right. So, hey, no calls. Last call for calls on this topic. We're going to move on to other stuff and probably loosen up a little bit when we come back from our break. What? Oh, okay. Let's take a call. Hey, Cameron, you're on the show. This is Brett.
Hey, Brett.
There he is. Remember Cameron Osborne?
Hello, Cameron. How's it going, buddy?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Quite well.
Good, good. What's on your mind?
So when you first put out that podcast, I listened to it, but like I was at work and whatever. And so I wasn't able to like digest a lot of it.
Which podcast are we talking about?
You guys, I don't know. It was one of the first ones about Evernote, I think.
Oh, the Presence and Productivity podcast.
Yeah.
Yep. Sure.
And so I wasn't able to digest a lot of it. And I'm like, I'm interested in like calming down and stuff. Like, I feel like life sometimes like weighs down on you a lot when like you have all this crap going on and you can't figure out, you can't sort it out. It's all in your head. And then what you guys were talking about, like your head is not always the best tool.
Right.
So I'm starting from scratch here. I've got the Evernote app up but I feel like it's a big mountain of stuff to get a hold of. So is there like a good YouTube video, a good tutorial or something you could direct me to?
Yeah. I would recommend just in the YouTube search, a good place to start, just put in Evernote GTD and you'll probably pull up the introductory video for the, secret weapon. And like a true tech support person, I will do that along with you here just to see what I get. I'm going to YouTube right now.
There's a website. It's like secretweapon.com.
Yeah, there's right?
And after you watch the videos, if they talk you into buying their mind drink, let us know how it is.
Okay. And these secret weapon guys, are they like a third party to this?
Yeah, they're not. I don't think that they're getting revenue from either David Allen, the whole Getting Things Done Empire, or from Evernote. When I do GTD Evernote, GTD for Getting Things Done and Evernote, the fourth video down is called The Secret Weapon, the free GTD and Evernote combo. It's 7 minutes and 30 seconds long. This was the video that I watched when I had started to read Getting Things Done back in August, and this was the video that made me download Evernote and immediately start using it as the tool to integrate the principles of GTD into my life at that time. So I highly recommend it. And it's one of those like RSA Animate videos where there's somebody drawing on a whiteboard. So I would watch that. And then, you know, it's just a question of what do you have going on in life? You're young. Are you a student?
No. So I'm working right now. I work in a restaurant and I want to get to New Hampshire and stuff. And like I've kind of got a plan for it all, but it's like I feel like I'm just like I'm not grasping on anything to like really get things done, you know?
Yeah, I think that what it was for me too is that all that stuff that was either ambition or things that I wanted or needed to get done was just kind of swirling around in my head. So a big important first step as far as clarity and serenity is concerned is being able to externalize it. You know, having a place to put it where you can see it. And I mean, this even speaks to like journaling. You know, the reason why people talk about journaling as being so valuable is you're getting stuff out of your head and in front of your eyes, you know, where you can start to maybe see things and make connections and put things where they need to be or get rid of things that you don't need anymore. So externalize everything. And that, as we were talking about before you called, gets you closer to this mind like water state where, you know, there's just a peace and a calm that comes from not trying to hold all that stuff in your mind. Because even if you're not talking
about what I'm looking for.
Yeah. And even if you're not talking about what Osborne is talking about, where he's managing all of these people and all of these tasks in a relatively large company, it's useful for what you're talking about too. You're a young man who wants to get, you know, life organized. You want to get some goals set and you want to figure out what the steps are to achieving those goals. Am I right?
Correct. Yep.
So I feel the same way. You know, I am often
you know, looking to the future. And sometimes it's frustrating where you can see where you want to get, but you have no idea. There's just like a foggy ravine in front of the place you can see and where you are. So, you know, starting to say, what's the next step? What's the next action? Even like saying, well, this is a 78 step process. You don't have to think that way. You just have to say, what's the next thing I need to do? How do I do it? That helped me learn and change a lot of things in my life.
Okay. And you recommend reading the Getting Things Done book? I don't want to, but because it is the basis of everything. So, but it's full of like, it talks about like paper and stuff. What am I going to do with that stuff?
Right. I mean, you can edit it in your mind as you're reading for a, you know, 2013 person. And recognize that a lot of the stuff that he was talking about in 2001. And now I could be wrong. There could be a revised edition for 2010, 2012 that I just haven't seen. The copy that I have, my old webmaster Ofer gave to me in 2010. I think it is the original paperback. I read the book and listened to the audiobook at the same time. And the reason why I like audiobooks if I'm trying to learn something new is that if I'm reading a book, I don't really think highlighting is the same thing as writing stuff down yourself, you know? So if I'm listening to an audiobook, I can be taking notes, lecture style, if I need to, instead of stopping reading and writing and then going back to reading. The reading can just continue while I take notes. Right. And, you know, I would take it a chapter at a time. I would listen to him read the chapter, take notes, draw diagrams, stop, reread what I had written, and then move on to the next chapter. And, you know, I mean, I think I could get a lot more out of Getting Things Done and Evernote than I'm currently getting out of it. Like, I really don't feel terribly more productive than I was 5 months ago, but I feel better about the process of producing now than I used to.
Good.
But, you know, start with that video and see how you feel after that. So that's a good place to start. And we go into more detail in that series. And one episode that I really recommend is the last one with Jake DeSillis from the Voluntary Life podcast. It's called Tools for a Freed Mind and a Voluntary Life. Highly, highly recommend that.
Okay.
So follow up with me and you know, in a couple of weeks and let me know how you're doing. I'm interested to hear.
I definitely will. Thank you guys very much for the show.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Have a good night, Cameron.
Thanks, you too.
Break time. Break time.
New subscriber, geography, trivia. You just say a person's name and then tell a fact about where they live.
The lettuce capital of the world. Okay, we're going to start today with Brian B., who lives in St. Charles, Missouri. Did you know? It's the third oldest city west of the Mississippi, founded all the way back in the 1760s. Its original name was Les Petits Côtes, which means Little Hills in French. The last civilized stop for Lewis and Clark and their expedition in 1804. So thank you to Brian B. Next, we have Justin S. in Kearney, Nebraska. This is the birthplace of Charlie Tuna. Yep, Charlie Tuna. Now, Charlie Tuna is a radio personality, and he, in the 1980s, was on America's Top 10 with Casey Kasem. And 2 decades later, this guy's career in radio spans, like 40 years. He became the host of that. Charlie Tuna. Next, we have James C., who's in Elk Grove, California. Well, you know, here's what I recommend. Check out the Great Pumpkin Festival that they have there every year. You can participate in a giant pumpkin weigh-off, a pumpkin regatta. You can sample all kinds of delicious pumpkin foods and even pumpkin merchandise and crafts. Whoa. Before you go, here's something that you should take into consideration. We go to Yelp to get a review. This person writes, "This was my third year in a row attending the Pumpkin Festival. They really don't have as much pumpkin-related stuff as I'd like, hence the 4-star rating out of 5. If anything, there's a lot of vendors and businesses having nothing to do with pumpkins. Are you kidding me? One thing I look forward to every year is the Scarecrow Garden. My goodness. Thank you, James. Next, we have Matt, or Matthew R., who is in Bowling Green, Kentucky. If you're there, check out the National Corvette Museum. Is that really all I wrote? And you know what? The Everly Brothers were inspired to write a song by Bowling Green. The name of that song, Bowling Green. There you go. How about that? Next we have, and I'm sorry, I'm going to take a guess on the pronunciation here. Jaidev, J-A-I-D-E-V, B, that's the last initial, in Winnipeg, Manitoba. How about this, folks? Are you sitting down? Winnie the Pooh was named after the city of Winnipeg by a Canadian lieutenant in the Fort Garry Horse Militia. And it's also the Slurpee capital of the world. The people in the city that's very cold almost half the year consume an estimated 400,000 Slurpees per month. Damn. Thank you, Hey Dev. I hope I got that pronunciation right. Next, we have Neil C. He is in Uzumasa, Japan. Uzumasa is often called the Hollywood of Japan. And if you're there, check out the Toei Kyoto Studio Park, where I looked it up on TripAdvisor. I had to read the review that somebody wrote entitled Ninjas in 3D. Not quite like Disneyland, but fun all the same. Make sure you go to the Japanese haunted house. I think the Japanese do horror better than anyone else. If you go, make sure you bring a camera. Right. Good advice, because there is hardly any place to get a camera in Japan. Thank you, Neil. Next, we have Josh, who is in Kent, Washington. Are you ready for this one? During the Great Depression, Kent was known as the lettuce capital of the world. That being said, their farmers market, which is held every June through the end of September, right at the corner there of the Kent Station Shopping Plaza and the public library, probably not the worst place in the world to pick yourself up some lettuce, right? Oh, Brett. And Natchez, Washington, is LST. The name Natchez means rough, turbulent water, taken from the swiftly moving Natchez River flowing through the valley there. Ooh, you know, check out the Sportsman Days that they have in September. I mean, you know, if you're in Kent for the farmer's market, swing on over to, Sportsman Days at the Natchez Lion Club. Can't be more than 300 miles away. I don't know. I didn't look at these two places on a map. And if you're there, you know, you might want to enter yourself into the Chainsaw Carver Contest. You carve things with a chainsaw. So bring a chainsaw. Next, we have Monty M. in Arkansas City, Kansas. You know, I said, what's going on down there? Why do they have cities named after other states that don't even, in some cases, border the state? Like Arkansas doesn't even border Kansas. What's going on? Well, let's investigate. Here's what I found out. The natives refer to the place as Nechunka, which roughly translates to the place between the waters, a reference to the confluence of the Arkansas and Walnut Rivers. When settlers established the town in the late 1800s, they apparently had difficulty choosing a name. So they ran through a couple of different options, Delphi, Maple City, Walnut City. Finally, they settled on Arkansas City, not for the silly state of Arkansas, but for the river that's nearby. And somebody signed up using the name Three Little Joys. They're in Burns Lake, British Columbia, a little town that was settled by workers who were building the Grand Trunk Pacific Railway in the first decade of the 1900s. If you go there, check out the notorious Bucket of Blood, an old log cabin, which is right next to the museum. And this was a former fur trading office that was turned into a little gambling operation. It's named for a poker dispute that ended in one player shooting another. It's kind of an exaggeration, Bucket of Blood. Next, we have Kevin K. in Middletown, Connecticut. Well, who's from Middletown, or who has lived in Middletown? Bill Belichick is currently the head coach of the New England Patriots. Many of you say, I don't care, I don't like sports. Okay, how about Joss Whedon? He's from there, too. Or he went to Wesleyan University. And who else spent time in Middleton? Look at this, friend of the show, Woodrow Wilson. He was a professor at Wesleyan. He taught political economy. Yeah.
New subscriber, geography, trivia. You just say a person's name and they tell a fact about where they live.